hello there, and welcome to the Blind Handyman Show. This being show number, what, 74?
74.
Oh, boy. Oh. This is April 5th, 2004. And we're recording right here at the Little Ranch House on Southwood Drive here in Lufkin, Texas. For the next hour, we're going to talk about building, repairing, and maintaining, all designed, of course, with the blind in mind. Here are the hosts for the show, ladies and gentlemen, Don Patterson.
Ah, return from the dead.
There
return from being absent.
Hi, Don Shaw.
Hi, Mr. Tom.
I wasn't through yet, Mr. Houston. I wanted to say, if my wife is out there listening, please call me.
Somewhere in radio land.
My name is Tom Houston, but ladies and gentlemen, the creator and producer of the Blind Handyman Show, here he is, Phil Parr.
Yes, it is nice to have you back, Don Pat.
Well, I'm glad to be back.
Good. Good. You missed a cooking show, and then you missed the other one. You just forgot, right? Didn't you?
I attribute it to old age.
That you just forgot just we were actually doing.
Well, I didn't believe it.
The
actually, I didn't believe it.
Show that
you
was
guys
fact,
had gotten up off your beds, and I just I didn't think you'd do it.
You didn't believe we were going to do.
I didn't know y'all put that. Much, I didn't know y'all placed that great a value on this old deal.
Well, it's an excuse to drink, and so that's probably the reason we do. But anyway, we're all here today, and it's good to have everybody. It's a kind of a weird day in East Texas. Like I said, it smells like fall outside. All that pollen or whatever it is in the air.
Yeah, man.
Just nasty. That's what's... Is that what's making you cough, Houston?
That's why I'm coughing and sneezing.
Coughing
and
sneezing.
I believe. So I'm going to sneeze my way through the email today.
Do you realize that, let's see, is it 2 weeks from, let's see, what is this Thursday? This Thursday is the 8th. Is that right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah, two weeks from this Thursday, those boys come from Dallas.
Oh, boy.
Yeah, it's hard to believe. Another edition.
Disgusting, and it's starting making a potato salad now. You're
no kidding.
Jalapeno cornbread.
Yeah, I think I'll email my chili.
Email your chili to blind. Anyway, those Dallas guys are coming down. I don't know what we'll do, but I hope the weather holds.
I do, too.
It would be cool enough this time to build a little fire outside.
Yeah, it'd be nice if it stayed like this, but I got a feeling yesterday, you know, out in the sunshine, it was hot. It just got plain hot.
It got plain hot.
Oh, yeah, by then.
It was a little touch of August, you know, just letting you know that how hot it's really going to be.
But we were over Johnson's yesterday. We did burgers over Johnson's. By about 7:30, it was cool. It was 55 when I got up this morning at 4:30.
Uh-huh.
So that's plenty cool. Plenty cool enough for a little outside fire if a guy wanted one. And show 74. Well, that's good. We've done all these shows. And 34 on the Blind Handyman. Those of you on the Blind Like Me, if you're not on the Blind Like Me list, you should be.
You've missed a boat here lately.
You've missed a wonderful little controversy. I had the most fun Saturday I've had in a long time. I didn't unplug that phone.
I guess she's calling. She heard my message.
No, that's not going to be her. That'll just have to ring. Anyway, I threatened to put limits on the list Saturday, say a 5 post per day limit. And some of these folks went berserk. Well, I'll just leave the list if you do that.
Yeah.
Well, I'll talk to you later then. You know, would you want us to take you off now or what? So I don't know what the deal is, but we're back to normal. We had a little lady on there who was posting 30 messages a day, little short messages. Hi, I'm having a cup of coffee. And it got disgusting. Well, I think we've got her handled. And so
yeah, those quick little messages.
The address is blindlikeme-subscribe@hotmail.com. blindlikeme-subscribe@hotmail.com. Is that right, Shaw?
Yeah, at yahoo.com.
Oh, yahoo.com. That's right.
Yahoo.com.
blindlikeme-subscribe@yahoo.groups. Is it Yahoo Groups?
Yes, it is, in fact. It is.
All right,
Yahoo
let's start over here.
That email address is...
We'd like to give you the email address for the Blind Like Me list.
That's right.
It's blindlikeme-subscribe@yahoogroups.com.
That is correct.
That'll get you on the list.
Y'all were probably on somebody else's list. Y'all were
probably trying
to take somebody off of another list.
And this is a no rules list, and we talk about blind issues and all kinds of things.
All kinds of things.
We also have the Blind Handyman. That's blindhandyman-subscribe@yahoogroups.com. You can join the Blind Handyman list where we talk about repairing and doing things. Any question you have about anything you want to know, handyman stuff, somebody on that list will know.
Somebody will know.
The answer. So blindhandyman-subscribe@yahoogroups.com.
Lots of talented folks on that handyman list.
That'll put you on the list. And the Blind Like Me list has gotten up to pretty good traffic. It's probably 100 messages a day now. So, but they're, you know, usually intelligent messages. I threatened to change the name to Dumb Like Me the other morning. the other day. But anyway, we've had quite a little controversy. And if you don't mind a little, everybody's freaking out. It's just a list, folks. Come on. It's not life. It's just a little. Anyway, we're just having fun. So if you'd like to join either one of those lists, we'd love to have you. Tommy, go ahead.
Okay, here's a guy that says years ago he bought a new folding cane as a backup to his regular one.
Uh-huh.
Every once in a while, I check to make sure it's still where it ought to be. However, I have noticed that the rubber handle has a strong smell of rubber, and that smell transfers immediately to my hands, and the smell is stubborn to wash off the hands. Does anyone, I mean anyone, have any suggestions as to how to seal or cure the rubber so it doesn't transfer the smell so easily?
Wear gloves.
Thanks, Wayne.
Yeah, that'd be the simple answer, wouldn't it?
My cane didn't have that problem.
I bought a cane like that 100 years ago, actually, that did. I know what it's like, the golf tee handle type that you're talking about, the rubber handle. And, you know, it seems like it took it a while, actually, to go away.
To cure.
It has now. It's cured out, I guess, so to speak. But, yeah, gloves would be the quick and simple way.
That would be the simplest answer.
Or start using it and let it wear off, huh?
It would eventually quit doing that.
It'll eventually wear off. But, you know, I saw that post on the handyman list, and actually there wasn't a good answer to that question. I didn't have one either, so I didn't post anything. But I don't know.
My cane's never done that. I've got a couple of those rubber handle golf grip clubs with the elastic that you fold up. I got a couple of those. I've got one and I carry as a travel one, and I got one I keep in the truck in case I don't have a cane. So I don't know. There's somebody.
I wonder if you could take that one off and put another one on. You know, used to you could buy bicycle handle grips.
Yeah.
You know, you could buy one. Why don't you cut that one off and go to the bike store and buy you a...
The only thing is it's pretty intricate because it's got the elastic down through it.
Well, I wouldn't do that. Then don't start whacking. Yeah.
Might be the problem.
It'd be a little hard. Now, there are guys that repair. I saw the other day somewhere where there's somebody that repairs those folding canes.
I think they may, believe it or not, up here at SFA. You know, they have the orientation and mobility class.
Yeah.
And part of their, and I also think they are in contact with or do themselves, maybe have their students repair. I could ask Emily about that.
Cane repair.
Yeah, somebody's probably got an answer to that question.
I know they make them. Like, you can get them, you can give them the measurements and buy a cane from them. And I think they may repair
custom
them.
Make your stick for you?
Yeah.
I guess you could wrap the handle with
duct tape.
Yeah.
Duct tape would work. You could wrap it smooth with duct tape, and that would solve your problem. But that ought not to happen. I mean,
it ought to not.
Seal it or cure it or do something to it to keep that from happening. But gloves would be the instant answer, wouldn't they?
Wear
one glove like Michael Jackson.
Yeah.
I guess not. All right. Anyway.
Okay, hi, gang. I have a 1959 jukebox that is just great to listen to. However, the turntable isn't turning at a full 45 RPM speed. I can't tell if the arm is too heavy or if so, how to adjust the weight or how to speed up the turntable. Any suggestions?
Chances are the arm is not too heavy. It'd have to be really heavy before it would slow it down. What I would think the deal would be, because those motors run at a constant speed, what I'd do is take the turntable off and clean the pinch roller under there, because there'll be a pinch roller that between the motor shaft and the turntable, that actually a pinch roller that turns the turntable. I'd take the turntable off and clean the rim of the turntable and clean the pinch roller and clean the little shaft that comes up through the motor. As those motors usually run, I mean, if they run, they run at the same speed usually. I can't imagine the motor slowing down. I guess that's possible. But usually they get dirty and slip a little bit. And there may be an adjustment on there to pull. I know on professional turntables there is an adjustment that will allow you to pull the pinch roller up a little tighter if it's slipping a little bit. So there may be some adjustment on there. I'd look at that You know, if there's a hole,
if
there's a hole, put a screwdriver in it and see if there's a screw in there and turn it and see what it does. That's what I always do.
Wasn't it amazing, though, back then, I mean, or back in the, you know, the era of the jukebox got to be gone. There was jukeboxes everywhere in restaurants.
Yeah.
Name a place in Lufkin that's not a drinking establishment. Where there's a jukebox.
They don't have any more. They have TVs everywhere now.
Yeah. There's no jukebox, but not even CD jukebox. I mean, there's, like, you can't go to Lone Star Charlie's and play your favorite from the 60s.
Now, our friend Sam Fitzgerald was in town. In fact, Sam was here. We did a handyman show not long ago. Did I tell this story, this jukebox story? Have I told you this yet?
Yeah, you've told me.
They went over there to this new club called Jimmy's 2, which is in the building that the Holiday Inn used to be in, at 59 in the Loop South.
That's where your little Cucos, Mexican, got their beer from.
And there was a Chinese restaurant in there at one time.
Right.
All right. There's a place called Jimmy's 2. It's a club in there. Jimmy's 1 is across the river. And this is Jimmy's 2. It's owned by Jimmy Parks, Jimmy whatever his name is. He used to be married to Donna. Anyway, Sam went in there, and they were setting up this new sound system, and they started playing Mockingbird Hill by Patti Page. Remember that song?
Yeah.
When it's late in the evening, I climb the old Patti Page song. And so Sam went up and said, "Where in the hell would you get a copy of Mockingbird Hill?" And the guy said, "Well, we have 500,000 songs in this jukebox."
Man.
Holy moly.
That's what I said. 500. So just to try them, the waitress, what is her name? I can't remember her name. She's worked everywhere in town. I know her real well. Said, "Well, how about Wreck on the Highway? I mean, how about I Didn't Hear Nobody Pray?" And Sam said, "Well, I think the actual title of this song is Wreck on the Highway, and I'll be damned if they didn't have it." The Roy Acuff version of Wreck on the Highway. 500,000 tunes in the... It's a karaoke. It's not a karaoke. It's a disco thing where you have a disc jockey that plays requests, you know? But 500,000 tunes on this gigantic hard drive.
That is just amazing.
But I guess when you think about it, once it was done... They just bridged it and dumped it all to another one and another one. And,
once it was done.
Once some guy sat there and played all these tunes off CD or records or whatever he played them off of and put them in the hard drive, MP3 compressed, I'm sure.
Oh, yeah.
It was done. Once it was done once, that's all they had to do it because they could duplicate it. Unlike, making a tape where you'd lose quality.
I can't imagine anyone knowing... any person under 40 requesting Mockingbird Hill.
Well, I can't either, but it's on the... It was, 500... Does anybody know... If anybody knows anything about this, email me. I want to know. I'd like to have the hard drive with 500,000.
Yeah,
anyway.
All these record and CD collections, eh?
Yeah,
no kidding.
I've got a good handyman question here. Right. This is on soiled carpet. Mm-hmm. Says, "Hello, I have both a dog and a cat and a solid color carpet in my living room and front hallway. I try to have carpet steam cleaned once a year, but I can't always swing that financially. Now, the carpet isn't stained from accidents. It just gets kind of dark, I think, especially where animals sleep.
Dirty feet.
Anybody have a recommendation for a good carpet cleaner or spray? I've tried lots of stuff and the club soda treatment, but I don't seem to be getting the job done. I even used a wet dry vac to suck up water and dirt, but I'm doomed to have soil spots till I can get the pros out here again. Thanks for the recommendations, Joe Witten."
Boy, this is out of my bailiwick. Go ahead.
Well, I used Dennis Dutton, our local restoration, and, he comes, if you have a fire, he comes and steam cleans carpet. And I was like, just one room, great big room, was $69, and it did okay. But anyway, the long and the short of it, the guy was telling me how to spot clean all that, and he said, "And you can buy this Rug Doctor at the stores. It's a concentrated solution. You mix it down, or you can get several rug shampoos."
Sure can.
But the carpet cleaning people to me said, the guy told me, he said, instead of wasting your money, and then these shampoos and carpet cleaners can just leave a residue or really kind of damage. Anyway, the long and short of it, he suggested water and vinegar, a light solution of water and vinegar would be your best bet. So you might try that.
Oh, you might try that. It might be something. I'd like to, for you to try that and let us know if it works.
Yeah, right back to the list.
Yeah, right back to the list. Let us know. But water and vent, wonder how much. I guess not much.
I would say not real stout, or you might try it until it works. And he just seemed to real, you know, I said, well, I can get some of the spray shampoo or the spray spot remover cleaner. But they seemed to think it kind of didn't do the carpet very well.
Water and vinegar.
Mm-hmm. That's interesting.
Like maybe a teaspoon of vinegar to a gallon of water or something?
Oh, maybe a little more. I have no
idea. More
just,
than that.
I would just try it.
Try it.
And I was trying to think. See, it seems like that somebody told me one time that baking soda and, you know, it's, but we're talking dirt, and the problem is you want to get it up instead of smearing it. And if she's tried her sucking up that, but I would just try the water and vinegar.
Be worth a try and write the list back and let us know how it goes. That's good. That's a good question.
Okay. Now, on one of the Blind Handyman shows, there was talk about repairing wallpaper that has come unglued at the seam.
Uh-huh.
Does anyone remember what type of glue was used? I remember them talking about an aerosol type glue, but don't remember what was used. And this is from Bryce.
Well,
anybody remember?
I could. There is an aerosol glue. It comes in a can. I don't have the name of it on the top of my head. But if you went in someplace, I think it's like a multi-purpose. It'll glue a lot of things, wallpaper being one of them. Now, there again, aerosol and a spray, it's going to go maybe more, cover more area than you may want. Yeah, don't think it stains. But there is, if your wallpaper's coming in a tube, like toothpaste, a seam sealer.
Looks like that'd be better. It does, doesn't it?
It's more blind friendly. I think you open the little tube and you may have to snip the end like a little 45-degree angle. Uh-huh. You don't put it in a gun. You don't need like a caulking gun. It's just a little tube you hold in your hand. And I've found some of the best results is squirted in the seam, all right, but then also kind of put some on your finger and do the back side of the wallpaper, you know, that's overlapped.
Yep.
So squeeze some down on the paper that you want to glue it to, and then put some on the back of the other paper. But that, and it's called seam sealer, I think. But the aerosol, I've used both of them. If you're totally blind, the aerosol may go further than you want.
May get away from you, the aerosol. Yeah. But I'd say this stuff in a tube would be pretty good. So anyway, another thing, I guess any place that sold wallpaper would know about seam sealer in a tube.
Absolutely.
You would think. Any carpet store that's on Mars, most carpet stores also sell wallpaper.
Right.
Anyway.
Wallpaper supplies.
We're very close to actually dispensing some useful information, guys. Take a short break. Be back with our guest, Tim Ford, in just a minute. And more of the Blind Handyman Show. The Blind Handyman Show is blind people have as many plumbing problems and household repairs to do as sighted people do, but we can't do them exactly the same way sighted people do, so we need some input from other blind people to find out how they do household repairs, and so we formed this Blind Handyman, and we got a list going. And as far as Blind Like Me is concerned, we want to use it as an educational tool. As I remember being a young adult, a young person, and thinking, well, how am I going to, I want to
a nice house and kids and a good job. And how am I going to do that? And I had just had no idea. And I think the Blind Like Me show demonstrates the fact that it can be done even if you are blind. That's not a handicap. It can be done.
If you would like to be a guest on either show, or you can suggest someone as a guest, email us at blindhandyman@hotmail.com or blindlikeme@txucom.net.
Well, so far, it's been a labor of love.
Listening to the Blind Handyman, the talk of the blind community. Our email address is blindhandyman@hotmail.com. If you would like to be part of the show, leave us a phone number and we will contact you soon. Now, here's more of today's show with Phil Parr.
Well, we had a little problem, but we've solved the problem, and with any luck at all, Tim Ford is with us. Hi, Tim. How are you, sir?
Doing fine.
You don't check that email account too often, do you?
Apparently not often enough.
Apparently not often. Well, did we? I hope we didn't run off a good paying client or anything, did we? No.
No. I'll charge you the same I charge all my other clients.
Is that right? All right. Yeah. Well, send us a bill. That'll be fine. We won't mind a bit. Now, just to refresh everybody's memory, you're in California in. What city there?
I work in the state capital in Sacramento.
Work in Sacramento. And you're an attorney. Is that correct?
Absolutely.
And what sort of law, I think we discussed it before, what type of law do you practice?
I work for one of the state agencies, and I handle, some of the work is the same as you'd get with any state agency, but then I specialize in certain areas, so I get a lot of experience, say, at employment law and civil rights cases and some criminal matters.
Yeah, so you actually get to do it all except domestic, I guess. You don't have any, don't do any of that.
Right.
Well, you're lucky. It's what my wife does is domestic a lot.
And then the occasional radio show.
And the occasional radio show. Well, that's good. That's something. We wanted today to talk about hiring contractors. Is that right? Have you just built a house or what?
No, but mentioned that's a topic to talk about, and I can discuss some of that. I think last time we were talking about how to get the most to protect yourself when you're getting auto repairs done.
Yeah, that's right.
And so that kind of spilled into the area of another thing that is, homeowners, we get into. You know, a lot of us do have cars and have to worry about that, but for sure a lot of us also have homes, and then what happens when you get a project that's a little beyond the handyman stage and you want to have someone do it?
Have to hire somebody, yeah.
And that happens from time to time.
Sure it does.
Well, sometimes it happens when you mess up and you end up in a big mess.
Oh, I've been there.
That's
numbered, especially plumbing projects, you know.
Yeah.
Well, I'm glad you mentioned that. I recently had to replace a garbage disposal, and by golly, I remembered about knocking out that little plug there for the dishwasher hose.
You better.
Yeah.
If you don't, the dishwasher won't work, and you won't know why.
Yeah, well, you know you have a lot of water underneath the sink, but when is fine.
Yeah.
So with, I don't know if you guys want to ask questions or if I just kind of take off here.
Take off and we'll sort of ask around a little bit, okay?
When you get into hiring a contractor to do the work, you get into an area, well, like anything of contracting, where there needs to be a clear understanding between the parties. Now, that sounds basic and almost too simple, but it's a good thing to start with because it all gets back to what was actually agreed upon and how do you prove it. So, first of all, making sure you ask the questions, making sure that everything that's important is not only talked about, but gets put down somewhere in writing. Because later on, whatever sort of verbal deals you think you had just may not be there to get enforced.
True.
So getting it down in writing is important. Take the time to get stuff read. We have print scanners now, and a lot of people can even do things electronically. You can do some on email.
Yeah.
But you still may have to get down the point of getting someone just to read over all that dumb fine print, because that fine print can get you.
Yep.
The fine print can come up in a lot of ways when it comes to what to do when there's a dispute. So you might find out that where you think you have certain rights, fine print may have not given you all those rights or may have some taken away. Now, one thing that is different when you're getting to this area is that in almost all the states, I haven't checked it out, so I don't know if it's true in all 50 states, but I can say that certainly true in most of them, that in order to do work for someone in their home, remodeling all that, you're supposed to be a contractor or have a license for that.
At least by the city.
Yeah, in California, it's all at the state level. Places can vary, but there will be, at some level of government, a licensing board where that person's supposed to be registered. And they have a number, and in most cases, what that contractor's board can do is give you a lot of help if something goes wrong. The first thing they can let you know is if the person has a bad record or not. That's where you get the contractor's name and their contractor number.
Yeah.
And you just call up the state. In most places, you can do it on the Internet and run that number and see if they have, in effect, a rap sheet.
And that's got to be a good thing to know.
You can also check with local chambers of commerce, better business bureaus. They'll have indications. Now, you may not find anything on someone. So, like, if they say they're a registered contractor and you don't find anything, then you know right away that there's a problem there to avoid.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Because the contractor's licensing board, they at least put down some minimums. The person has to be registered. There's a way to find them. They have to have certain minimum bond requirements, little things like making sure that subcontractors are paid, because, boy, I tell you, that's an area there you can sure get a problem with.
Yeah, we've had a little experience with that.
And then in most states, the Contractors Licensing Board can receive a complaint and actually hold hearings, investigate, and help negotiate an acceptable resolution. In California, that's a very, very powerful weapon, because if the contractor doesn't respond fairly and appropriately to the Contractors Licensing Board, then they can be barred from operating anywhere.
Yeah.
And then if the contractor fails to listen to what the Contractors Licensing Board is saying, they can eventually end up in criminal problems. So it can get very, very nasty. And in most cases, the Contractors Board will do all this absolutely for free. So you don't have to go out, because you don't want to be having to hire a lawyer just to take care of this. And so,
in other words, if the state determines that you have a legitimate complaint, they may take your complaint and litigate it for free.
Yes, and in most cases, they'll certainly do an initial investigation,
yeah,
and try to resolve complaints, and that, again, is all for free.
To try to determine whether you have a complaint or whether you have something or not, right?
Yeah, and they can help you figure out if you've got a problem.
Yeah.
Because the people that they have working there are generally people who were contractors.
At one time.
Yeah, and same thing comes up in auto repair. You've got usually a state licensing board, and they're specialists in the area, so they can help you a lot more in many cases than the average attorney can.
Yeah, I guess when you get into a thing like this, you just have to bear in mind that someday you may be in court with this fellow. He or she may not do everything they said they were going to do. So the best thing to do is get everything in writing.
It sure doesn't hurt, and you can put in something that reads. It doesn't have to read like an attorney. Agreements are just that, and so if you know how to say it, and the contractor agrees with that, there's no harm to put it in.
Yeah.
If they do hesitate to including something, that may be a danger signal.
You know, Tim, we live in kind of a small community here, and both Phil and I've just recently had a house built, a new house built, and so dealt with the builder and then his subcontractors, because the builder was responsible for these guys. But Phil and I had both talked about that we could probably be our own subcontract the whole thing. But here in small town East Texas, you run into, like, even if you had all these state agencies to deal with you against a guy, after you've dealt with him, the guy that you're dealing with may not have anything. You know what? That you may not could get any restitution if you got Joe Blow to pour your concrete slab. So it's really kind of important to find out who you're dealing with up front, right?
Well, absolutely. And California allows a person to be their own contractor, but there you get in the risk of you may pay yourself to have pieces done, and then if something goes wrong with the concrete, then the person coming in to do the plumbing may find out, or may tell you that they can't continue on because the contract or the concrete work was not done properly, and then you're stuck.
Yeah, really.
Yeah.
I've seen the case in point. I mean, right down the street from where I built my house, there's a guy that's been his own subcontractor. And the first thing, man, he has a concrete slab that is really, really not, it's just got some problems. And he was talking to me about it. And see, I dealt with a builder. I said, see, I would go back on my builder with whom I had a contract. This guy just, he was his own boss, you know, I mean, and he hired the concrete man himself. And I said, you know, if that guy wants to come and fix it, he can, but unless you want to take him to court and get a judgment against it, I don't know what you can do if he tells you no.
Well, there's names for it, but this is radio, so I won't say them.
Yes.
Yeah, whenever you try and save yourself some money, it's kind of like, you know, doing any project yourself. If you take that on, then you've got yourself as the person to pay for things if things go wrong.
Right.
So it is more expensive, say, to go on and have someone else oversee that, but part of what you're buying there is insurance.
Exactly.
You've got somebody other than yourself.
We have city inspectors, and so that would protect you some, because your inspector would come out and say, hey, this doesn't look right or this isn't right.
And that can help you, but if the person you're dealing with is kind of a fly-by-night operation and doesn't have enough backup, then they just find it's cheaper just to move on. It, one thing that's good, and if you're talking about local areas, check around. You don't want to assume that you have rights, because rights, and this is something that we all know here, make me emphasize, is you don't ever want to get to that stage.
No, you don't. If you can avoid it, you don't.
And so one of the things you find out is checking around and find out who's been good. Get recommendations. Talk to other customers. If you've got a small town, you can check around and talk to other people in the same business. You can talk to suppliers.
You know, it's real interesting. Our bankers that financed our house, they went out periodically with their – they had their inspector, and they took pictures.
Sure.
But you know what they told us? The guy said, that's for us. If you want to be – you need to be your own inspector. That was what the people told us that loaned us the money. They said, we're going to go approve it for us. But if you want a second guess, get your own inspectors.
Yeah,
and that's probably a good thing. The banks are in it for their
Absolutely.
Benefit, not for yours. That may be a shock to some people.
Well, yeah, they want their money back. But we had actually an incident of a friend of ours that did some work for Don's wife that did not pay the subs. And the subs are still attempting to collect that. And an electrician and a plumber who never got paid. So, you know, that can happen.
Now, there's some things that can help there, because in a lot of states, a subcontractor has tremendous power. They can file a lien against your home or the property and tie things up. And even though you paid money to one person, if they didn't pass it along, you'd be stuck. So there's things called a payment bond. Some people call it a performance bond. Some will call it a subcontractor's bond. And the purpose there is that you've got what is, in effect, is an insurance policy that the contractor takes out, guaranteeing, another term is guarantee bond, that those subs are going to get paid. And that can be part of the contract, is that they have to take out one of those bonds and make sure it's for enough money, and then they have to give you a copy of that, which you can then verify that it's actually a legitimate policy from a legitimate company.
Yeah.
And there you can check that out with, usually they're registered by the insurance companies. There was a big problem here in California, was just in the papers, where payment bonds were being issued by a fraudulent company. And so they had all these nice-looking payment bonds, but there was nothing behind it.
Yeah.
So, again, that kind of gets back around to, if the more you're going to take on yourself, the more you want to think about how to try and...
Well, you don't want to get into these things. That's what the purpose is. You don't want to go this far.
Now, one other thing came to mind in terms of getting recommendations. Friends, neighbors, that's a good place. Think about the supply places where these contractors buy their materials. They'll know if there's been payment problems or who is what, and those people tend to get pretty chatty.
Absolutely.
Well, yeah.
And you can find out a lot about what's going on. Now, if you really don't know anything about an area and you can't find enough details, for instance, on the Internet, and I wish I'd had a chance to run this for the show, but I believe it's the National Association of Home Remodelers.
Really?
There's also a website for the National Association of Home Manufacturers. Basically, it's the trade association of the people in this kind of business. And these are private organizations, but a lot of times they will have standards, they'll have sample agreements, they'll have members who have to go through some sort of certification. And also they'll usually have on those websites a lot of good information about here's what to do when you're going to be doing a project.
If you typed in home remodeling, you'd get more information than you wanted.
Right,
and you'd be able to find
home remodeling an association. You would probably find that.
You'd find somebody who registered these kind of people if you were in an area that you weren't familiar with.
Right.
Right.
You know, back Tim on talking about guaranteeing your thing. One thing our bank did, and they had a name for it. I can't think of what it was, but they withheld 10 or so percent of the builder's money for 30 days to ensure that his subcontractors were paid. That was in writing in our agreement.
That's a good thing that we see in a lot of contracts. Yeah. I even will have that in contracts that I'll do here whenever the person's supposed to deliver something tangible to you.
Right.
Is you hold money back, and you can hold it back, say, at all stages, so that a certain percent of every bill is held, and you could even set it up so it's held by a third party like the bank.
Right.
I remember, but
it's amazing how that money withhold will bring a contractor back.
Sure, gets him on the job a little quicker.
When we built this house 10 years ago, I remember Robert, the guy that built it, had credit with the supplier, credit with the, I think he bought his lumber at a place called the Big Ten Barn, which is a lumber yard here. And they gave him credit. I mean, he'd just order what he wanted to, put it on his bill, and when we paid him, he'd pay them. So that's, you know, if a place is willing to trust somebody that much, obviously he's a pretty good person. You're not going to get in trouble with a guy like that.
Yeah, and that's the kind of thing that you can only get by just talking to your local suppliers, and
yeah.
I think that's a good way to go.
Well, it's a real strange thing. You was talking about it, which it was a good point. We had just built a new house. And what we did not do, I wanted to pour a concrete slab behind the garage that I had built. Same size as the garage, 20 by 24. And so, but I did not get the original contractor to do it. I didn't know I wanted it at the time. So then I hem and hawed around and tried to get the guy to come back, and he never would. Hadn't paid him. So I called a concrete company, the guy who owns the trucks here. Somebody gave me his number and said, tell him, he'll send you a guy. And so I called him, and I said, Glenn, do you know somebody that pours concrete? And he sent me, a guy, he said, yeah, he does small jobs. And I called this man, he was there the next day and did the forms, and the next day after that he poured my slab.
Yeah. What a deal.
Yeah,
it gives me a good. One last thing I want to mention, which I've just seen a lot more about lately, and some areas of the country have it more than others, but it's the pre-manufactured buildings. It can even be just part of a house, like if you want to add on something. You can have those done by the companies that build the whole units off-site and then bring them on and put it in place.
Yeah.
And those are often very large businesses. The cost per square foot, for instance, in one area I checked, was about half what it would cost to have that built on-site.
Mm-hmm.
And it goes very, very quickly, and you've got a lot more guarantees because you don't owe them anything until that building's there.
Mm-hmm. Interesting. Yeah, until they actually tie it to your house, you don't pay a thing, do you?
But how does that stand up in the particular subdivision we built in, Tim, where it said no manufactured housing? Or, in other words, like, it's kind of directed at mobile homes and or these, well, what we call prefab homes.
Well, it's absolutely directed at mobile homes.
But if it didn't meet our code, I mean, I don't see how they could build some of it off-site.
That's something you might have to check in with the association, and that's a good thing for everyone to know about. If you live in a neighborhood where they have CC&Rs, they'll call them, governing documents, you want to check on these kind of things because you not only have the city and the contractor and your building permit, but you have your association, and they can hold you up just as much as anything else. Now, I suspect that, because I've done some association law before, and I've been a board president for hours. That sounds like a pretty old clause when the only kind of product these people put out looked just like what you thought. It was just basically a plain old box. And the people wanted, you know, more, not fancy, might not be the best term, but something that looks more like a nice home.
Uh-huh. Mm-hmm.
Well, the pre-manufactured home people now can build something that you would have no way of knowing was pre-done.
That it wasn't built on site.
Right. I mean, this is not just the boxy stuff. They'll build everything up to luxuries, and they can do custom designs and custom changes, and it's really quite an industry because all you're really doing is building the big pieces somewhere where you have a lot easier way of putting it together. It's a lot quicker, and then you put the pieces in. So it's like building a wall on the ground and sticking it up, except you're building a series of walls.
And so they bring it on the truck and attach it to your whatever you already have.
Yeah, so the association may have a notion in their head of what they mean by that, and showing them what you're talking about, they may say, okay, well, this is fine. But, or they may
They may reject you.
Yeah, I could see how it may apply. I mean, in our case, like where every house has to have brick, you see, so obviously they would have to do that on site. But if the framework you're talking about now, believe it or not, down the street, a guy built a second garage, and he had the ceiling joists, these one-piece pier. I mean, it was almost like a bridge. You know, all of the roof work and everything was pre-constructed off. And the carpenter there just put it on. I mean, they brought him in on a big truck. I mean, 25 feet long, you know.
Wow.
Well, you guys who do this kind of carpentry work, you know about buying pieces that are pre-done.
Right.
And no one thinks of that as being a manufactured home, but
I guess that's true.
You kind of take that to the normal logical extension, and we've had very good experiences with it. And the quality tends to be better by quite a bit.
And cheaper.
Yeah, better than building on site.
I agree with that.
Yeah. Well, we'll let you get back to whatever you were doing before we interrupted you, and you've given us some good information, and look forward someday to sitting down and visiting with you.
Well, thank you very much, and thanks for having me on.
Hey, thank you, sir.
Tim, we're having Blind Weekend 2 weeks from now. You want to come?
What a deal.
I'll check the schedule and get on right on it.
You do that. give me a call, Tim. Thank you, sir. Back with more of the Blind Like Me Show, Blind Handyman Show, in just a minute.
In new places, on streaming audio at the For the People website, from Houston's Taping for the Blind, on the Houston Radio Reading Service, from the In Touch Radio Reading Service, and on radio reading services all across the nation, and of course at acdradio.org. If your radio reading service is not airing Blind Like Me and the Blind Handyman, let them know both shows are available free of charge. Contact us at blindlikeme@txucom.net or call 936-634-9500. That's the Blind Handyman and Blind Like Me at new times in new places. Help us spread the word to blind people all around the world. Blind Like Me and the Blind Handyman. Available free to qualified blind people and their sight-dependent friends.
Well, the whole point of the Blind Handyman Show is blind people have as many plumbing problems and household repairs to do as sighted people do, but we can't do them exactly the same way sighted people do, so we need some input from other blind people to find out how they do household repairs, and so we started this Blind Handyman, and we got a list going. And as far as Blind Like Me is concerned, we want to use it as an educational tool. As I remember being a young adult, a young person, and thinking, well, how am I going to, I want to a nice house and kids and a good job, but how am I going to do that? And I had just had no idea. And I think the Blind Like Me Show demonstrates the fact that it can be done even if you are blind. That's not a handicap. It can be done.
If you would like to be a guest on either show, or you can suggest someone as a guest, email us at blindhandyman@hotmail.com or blindlikeme@txucom.net.
Well, so far, it's been a labor of love.
This is the Blind Handyman. Be sure and tell a friend about the program and email us often, blindhandyman@hotmail.com. Now, here is more of the show with Don Shaw.
All right, we are back, and Don Patterson, believe it or not, is going to talk about what mini blinds this time
Well, blinds. I think the mini blinds are the small slats.
Uh-huh.
And here recently I installed the 2-inch. They're called plantation blinds.
The wide slats.
Are
they vertical or horizontal?
They're vertical. Horizontal. Vertical.
They run this way?
No.
Side to side?
Yeah, side to side.
Okay. You got
me confused. They're vertical.
That's, yeah.
They're horizontal.
They're horizontal.
Horizontal.
Why did you ask that question?
Because I wanted to know.
Anyway, and the two or three, actually I put up three. We have some larger windows, and we're going to have true plantation shutters installed by a professional, and I wouldn't even attempt it. But blinds I'm pretty good at, and the windows I was dealing with were about 31 and a half width and 72. And it's real critical to take your measurements and be as exact as you can. You might want to take one across the top, one across the bottom to make sure, because I actually thought with the 31 and a half that a 30-inch blind might fit.
Uh-huh.
Not.
31
actually,
and a, wait a minute. You thought a 30-inch blind would fit on a 31-and-a-half-inch
window? 31-and-a-half.
Well, wrong.
Well, wrong is right. It's a 31-inch blind worked fine. I actually made a 30-inch fit. I shimmed in the little thing. But, excuse me.
What a deal.
I'm the one that's supposed to be coughing today. I have all the allergies and the runny nose and all that kind of stuff.
I've all of a sudden had an attack. But anyway, the basic thing on a small window is putting up two side brackets, one on each side. Now, on all the blinds you'll buy, they'll also give you a center bracket. But on this smaller window, I wouldn't put it up.
I mean, it's hard to put that center bracket up.
Yeah,
because it hooks on the top of the blind, and you can't get to it. I mean, just leave it off.
Right.
Forget.
Well, but what I did is our windows were when you put the bracket up. I spaced out from the window. We have the new sheetrocking techniques now are to curve the corners.
Yeah.
And so you really don't have a good square corner to measure. I mean, if it was just a squared corner, I would have put it right at the front of the window, leaving like maybe 2 inches between the blind and the window. But this is curved, so what I did is I took one of the brackets and turned it sideways, and I used it as a measurement to locate the other bracket. And most of these brackets, they have, you can either side mount them or you can mount them from the bottom into the overhead. And I chose to mount them from the side. And they call for 4 screws. And I'm telling you, these are the flimsiest, weakest screws. You can take, they're Phillips screw heads, and if you twist them about twice, you've stripped out the head.
Yep.
The wood and the old framing wood underneath that sheetrock, those old 2x4s, is green.
Go to the hardware store and buy you some 1.5-inch drywall screws. And
you can, but see, and the way these are so close to the top, you can't get an electric drill up there. And so what I did, though, is after I got my measurement, and I marked the holes with a pencil on the sheetrock, and I took my nail set. I have an old-fashioned nail punch that I love, and I tapped it in, got down to the wood, and I did that. And I only used 2 holes. I used one bottom, a bottom like the bottom left and the top right. You can put 4 screws, but the weight of this blind does not require that.
All right, and if you can't see, and you can't mark it with a pencil, take a long nail that sticks out further than the bracket, and tap it. Put it in the screw hole and just tap it once with a hammer, and bingo, you got a screw.
Right.
And the kind of drill you need is that long screwdriver drill.
Well, what I was going to say is I have a little moto tool which is perfect. This is the perfect job, but I did not have any bits for it. So I wound up, I took my nail set, but if you drive it in too far, it makes too big a hole. And so what I did, I did it in 3 stages. I took my nail set and started the hole into the wood. Then I got a bigger nail, but it was thinner in diameter, and I tapped it in. But, you don't want to drive it in so far you can't pull it out, because the top set of holes are so close to the top of the window, you can't get your hammer in there, so you just tap. But then the last implement I used was an old-fashioned ice pick.
Yeah.
And I made my hole as long as my screw, and they went in like just tightened up.
Of course, you can buy a little punch that you put on top of the nail, and then you hit the punch so you don't have to put your hammer in.
Well, yes, that's right. But to pull the nail out, you don't want to drive it in so far.
No, you don't.
But anyway, I made my own screw hole is the whole point, because it is so small an area to get a big electric drill in. And if I would have had a set of bits for my Moto tool, it was the perfect for your Dremel. Your Dremel tool was the perfect job for the Dremel. But anyway, two screws in each bracket. Make sure your measurements are right on that smaller window. The length was perfect, 72 inches. These were 6-foot windows. Didn't have to take any slats out. And you did not need the center bracket. But and it should normally take you probably about 15 minutes. The first one I did took me half a day, so don't do it that way.
So you slip the blind in, and then you put a little front on this bracket,
Actually, the bracket has a little door, a little thing that opens. And when you slide the blind in, then the little end cap pulls down, just like it's on a hinge, and it snaps
in
place.
That's a better idea.
Yeah. It's a much better idea.
Yeah, no kidding.
And bingo, you got blinds. But if you buy the right size, because if you hadn't, you'd have had to mount those brackets from up. You'd have had to mount them up on the top of the windows.
Yeah, to make closer.
Yeah, to make them closer. Yeah. But if you got the right size blind, you won't have to do that.
Just slides in. It was just a fit. Yeah.
So go forth and put up some blinds, mini blinds.
Well, we got these at Lowe's, and they were really, it was a good sale. They're quite expensive, and they had them like for $24 bucks.
Probably
they're $30. No, just for one. Yeah. I mean, they're expensive.
Cleaning them is going to be a problem, but we'll get into that. We'll do them with water and vinegar. I bet it'll work on the carpet. Anyway, another show, another 74 gone.
Yeah.
Thanks, Donald Pat.
Yes, sir. Enjoyed
it. Appreciate you. Glad to have you back. Hope you get over that cough.
I'm gonna ride my scooter next week.
All right. We'll all look forward to that, Our listeners will.
Well, I'll call in ahead of time and tell you I'm on my way.
Do a live remote from the scooter.
Don Shaw, thank you, sir, for coming and being with us.
Yep.
Tom Houston got up out of his sick bed. Actually, Tom is feeling pretty good. We'll tell you all about this someday when it's over, okay?
Okay.
That'll
work.
When it's over, we'll tell you all what's really going on. Thanks, Tom Houston. We'll see you next
really
week.
Not really over, but...
we don't mean the big dirt nap.
Not the big one.
We'll see you next week. I'm Phil Parris. He said the blind man, as he picked up his hammer and saw.
The Blind Handyman is produced by Out of Market Productions. 1604 Southwood Drive, Lufkin, Texas. Phone 936-634-9500.